Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, it's the question I'm going to get wherever I walk right now. Gosh, is it, you know, it's going to be spring here in just a little while, and I'm going to say,
bring it on.
Let me tell you, folks, it's already spring. We're already here. It's already time. It's happening fast. There's some funny things going on right now that we might not anticipate. As I've said in the past, I mean, we've been seeing things back up earlier and earlier. The Taiwan cherries blooming in January now, rather than on the cusp of January, February, rather than blooming in the middle of February as they used to. It was interesting. All over the state, people are exploring this idea of, gosh, spring is really already advanced. In fact, the funny part, Huntsville, which is as far away from Mobile as you can get, a very different climate, much, much colder in winter, generally. Spring is so far advanced there, they usually don't start their spring until April. Often, yeah, April. Let's call it April. They actually issued a spring frost and freeze warning for February, because the conditions had moved forward so much that the normal warnings that we need to give in spring up there in April, now we're giving in February. Wow. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. You know, here's the interesting thing. If this is a trend, if this is going to be happening, how do we get ready for it? How do we prepare for it? Try to figure out why it's a trend. Just say, look, we see it. We feel it. The plants are showing it. The birds are showing it. How do we react? Because we're gardeners. And because gardeners, it makes a difference what the seasons are. It makes a difference when the seasons occur. I've always said that there are six seasons on the Gulf Coast. It's our way of understanding that seasons make a difference for us. They make a difference in how you garden. They're not just some kind of abstract thing that some guy up in New York comes up with on his weather report. They're real things that affect you. And the spring conditions aren't the same in every place, nor are they the same year to year. And in our lifetimes, they may change dramatically from what we were born to and what we're going to be living with in a few years. So how do we still garden? Because you know what? Spring's important. It's not the most important season in your garden, but it's an important one. It's an important one. And we time so much of what we do. So how are we going to figure this out? How do we figure out what spring is? We're going to have to watch much more carefully than we've ever watched before. We're going to have to pay attention to what's going on around us. We're going to have to listen for signals from the trees, and we're going to have to recognize some trees have got this figured out and some trees don't. But we'll look for the ones that seem to have it most figured out. We'll look for the signals from certain types of bugs and certain types of birds. That's one of the ways you determine what the temperature is. And then we're going to have to look at trends over several years to see where spring seems to be heading. And I think we can say that it's probably backed up. Spring is clearly backed up. I think if I looked at the early part of the 20th century in Mobile, the start of spring would have been a week or two later than it is now. No question. I mean, we're looking at average last frost dates. All of those things have changed. They've moved back in the year. It's gotten warmer earlier. So those are the things we need to look out for. But here's the other problem, and this is what worries me, is that it's not going to be this stable thing where spring just simply backs up. The more we move backwards in time, the more spring moves backwards in time, the more it's going to be unstable. The more likely it is that a late freeze from the Arctic can overwhelm the Gulf of Mexico. So we're going to have these unstable conditions that we're going to have to watch out for. So what does a warming spring mean for us? This is pretty important. Here's what my suggestion is. Interestingly, a warming spring, a spring that moves back in time, that comes earlier and earlier, means we have to be more ready with frost protection. We've got to be more aware that, boy, there are things that could really mess us up here because spring is going to be unstable. And because we are going to have to move back, we're going to have to move back as early as we can in the year because the summers are occurring earlier. The 80 degree temperatures are occurring earlier. That means when we get those really hot nights, as we did in June, we have to move our year back or we're not going to be able to produce tomatoes. So we have to move things back. And that means we're going to have to be very, very aware that when we plant things, we have to be ready to protect them because it's easy to protect things from cold. It's impossible. It's impossible to protect things from the heat and humidity of summer. There's no way you can do it. What are you going to do? Shade the plants? It doesn't change the temperature. Doesn't change the fact that the night temperatures are so high. So how are we going to deal with that? Well, we're going to have to think more and more about how we protect plants, when we plant them, how we protect them. I'm glad that I got my peas out as early as I did. I'm glad that I planted my fava beans in fall this year rather than waiting to spring. Because of that, I know that I can get produce. I'm going to be able to get produce this year a little bit earlier than usual. And I'll be able to beat that powdery mildew. And those plants are pretty frost hardy. They're pretty good. If we had had, when I had planted my peas back in January, if we had had a terrible, the 1st of January, if we had had any really terrible cold, which we never did, I'd have just taken some leaves and thrown over it. Let them grow out from under the leaves. There it is. If I were planting potatoes, whew, potatoes are going to be trickier and trickier. Let me tell you about potatoes. We're going to have to figure out how to get our potatoes sprouting by January. And because the heat is arriving so much earlier now. So we're going to have our potatoes sprouting by January. That's going to be a challenge. Put them in the ground. And then as the potatoes grow up, as we get a freeze, we're going to have to cover them with leaves. It's that simple, but we have to think about it. We have to do it. What are we going to do about tomatoes? So here's the thing. I'll tell you the truth. You could, and it's because the climate is changing, it's worth experimenting. Just when you experiment, be careful. Be smart about it. Don't put all your eggs in one basket when you experiment. So if you want to start your tomatoes now, you go right ahead. It would be a good experiment this year. Probably a little early, but you give it a shot. I think it could work. I think if you're in Gulf Shores, it'll work just fine. If you're on Dauphin Island, it should work just fine. Fowl River, Tony, it might work good for you. It might work pretty good for downtown as long as we don't get another cold freeze. So what happens if we get another cold freeze? Well, there are two things. One, because the climate could be a little unstable, even though spring is beginning, and even though we haven't quite got to our average last frost date, I think it's maybe a smart thing to do. What are you going to do about those tomatoes? You could put them in the ground. The ground is already pretty warm. They'll probably grow. They'll probably do just fine. We'll have warm conditions next week, warm enough for those tomatoes to grow. But here's the thing. Protect them from the cool winds. When you put them out, put some stakes around them. And put a sheet or something on the back side of those tomatoes so that the cold wind doesn't blow on them. You see how easy that is? Do that. That's the first and most important thing. Because we're going to get some cold winds. And even temperatures in the lower 40s can slow them down. It can slow them down. So there you go. Do that. And then have some kind of protection ready to go up in case we get a last frost. That protection could be a big cardboard box. You know all that stuff you're getting from Amazon and you leave out on the street for it to get wet and all fall apart? Yep. Take some of those boxes, just put them down around the tomato. That will give you a lot of frost protection, an amazing amount of frost protection if you put it down on the night of the on the night of the frost. If you want to give it a little more, you can put a blanket over that. It's amazing what a difference that will make for most nights, and that will probably protect your plant through most frost. It's that simple. But you got to think about these things. Adjusting to our new springs. Hey, let's talk about it. Give me a call, 251-343-0106.
It's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train is hauled away. Well, sometimes.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I'm looking at these pictures of things like, oh, look at this melaton that Dan sent me. Best about time to pot it. Yeah, we can. It looks pretty good. I think it's fine. I think it's now is about time to go ahead and put it on top of the pot. And I think you'll be fine. It's going to be a nice melaton. Dan is sending me a picture. You know, we talked about melaton. It's very important to think about this when you've got melaton. You want to plant it out. If you plant the whole fruit. It's weird thing. You plant the whole fruit, and you just put it on about half buried in the top of the soil, and the seed is going to germinate inside that whole fruit. It's going to put the radical, the root piece is going to drop out of the bottom. The top's going to come out. The stem's going to come out of the top. Melaton kind of does things in reverse. Actually, the stem comes out of the top first and then the radical. Most plants, it's a little bit otherwise. But there it is. So I think that radical is going to be emerging here pretty soon, the root part. So, Dan, yeah, I'd go ahead and plant it about halfway in the pot, you know, about halfway, just emerging, just so that the radical, that root part that's going to drop down just below where the stem emerges, so that it doesn't have too far to travel and hit the ground. Running, if that makes sense. So it's that's a good looking melaton there, and it's about time. Keith and Agricola is he planted his potatoes yesterday. Oh boy, it needs to be done. It's more than time. Dan sent me a link. I can't see it. Clint has got a beautiful head of cauliflower. This is the winter. This is one of those winters when cauliflower works. It takes, Clint, it takes forever, doesn't it? It just, you just sit and you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait. And then finally you get a cauliflower head. They're absolutely beautiful when they occur. If you've got a really cold winter, it can be tough to do because they don't tend to produce their heads in fall like broccoli does and in winter. So it can be hard, and it's a lot of waiting, and then you'll cut that single broccoli cauliflower head, and you'll take it in, and you'll cook it, and you'll enjoy it, and you'll say, man, that took me 6 months. And you're going to say, ugh. I think they're beautiful. I think those cauliflower heads are absolutely beautiful. There's some great cauliflowers out there. Boy, they take dedication. You have to aspire to cauliflower heads. They take dedication. I admire that cauliflower head, Clint. Looking good, looking good. I bet a lot of you got cauliflower this year if you planted it. It was a great year for doing it. Good year for some other things. We're going to have a good year for loquats, I expect. I expect we're going to have a good year as long as we don't introduce diseases. Oh, heaven help us. I hope we don't introduce more diseases. We're going to talk about that. But as long as we don't introduce diseases that affect our citrus, we're going to have a great year for citrus. I think people are going to have great Meyer's lemons. They're going to have great Satsuma crops. They're going to have – it's going to be a good year as long as it doesn't get too hot during the summer, as long as it doesn't stay too hot. And as long as if we get a cool down next September, it's going to be an incredible year for citrus, I predict. The loquats are going to do really well. Your apples, your peaches are going to do terrible. It's going to be one of the worst years ever for apples and peaches for most folks because they need the kind of winter chill that they're not going to get. So it's interesting problem this winter. Tara, what's the tomato report?
Well, the tomato report is that, as I said, you know, I was gifted with a celebrity tomato about sometime in late November, mid to late November.
Oh, man, in my memory, I remember all this, yes.
And I just put it out on the south side of the house and let it, you know, do its thing. And we did have a couple of, as I recall, a couple of brief days of really cold weather. So I think that's when I first stuck it down inside. You know, it's an old styrofoam cooler with a crack down the side of it, right? Okay, you know that. Yeah, hillbilly farming, but it's in a place where it won't disturb my neighbors. Anyway, the plant continued to bloom, and when it produced three tomatoes.
Yep.
Now I'm holding the one that was the oldest. That's tennis ball size.
Yeah.
The secondary one was probably a little bigger than golf ball size, and the smallest one was more of a heart shape, which was interesting. Now the smallest one dropped off first, but that was due to some kind of an insect invasion. Can you believe it? Like in December. You know?
That's amazing.
Now these are not greenhouse. This was only planted in a pot, maybe
right.
And a half, 2 gallon pot, stuck down inside a styrofoam cooler that I occasionally covered with, when it was going to be really cold, with a wearing out wash tub. And then when it got really, really cold, a sheet, and super cold, the blizzard weather, which is my birthday, of course, every year, a tarp over that. But then took them off. The smallest one, the cherry smallest one, cherry shaped, heart shaped smallest one, insects got it. I'm looking at the largest one. It's got a little bit of blossom breakage on the bottom because it liberated itself from the vine. And the one in the middle is still on the vine.
So are they, yeah, and they probably haven't had enough sun and enough warm temperatures to really start turning colors yet, have they?
This one is colored.
It is colored.
It dropped itself off last Thursday.
Oh.
Because the vine was the vine part of it was turning brown, you know, going to where it was connected, the umbilical cord for it. And it, of course, gradually turned, it was partially colored at that time, despite the cold weather somehow actually made it turn color in this case.
Yeah, well, maybe, but that's interesting. So it finally had enough time to turn color. Finally, been on the vine long enough that it turned colors.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So that's interesting. So yes, if you had tomatoes this year, there's a chance you could make it through. When you said we had blizzard conditions, I have coleus still in my yard this year, which means that in Midtown Mobile we have barely even had a frost.
Oh, look, I got a sister in Michigan, man. Our blizzard conditions are, I'm saying that we got the drift of the polar vortex, right?
Yeah, we barely even got that.
We got unusually cold weathers for a few days.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was the normal weather. It was, but so it's interesting. I don't even know if we had a frost. I suspect a lot of gardens. There are places in a lot of gardens where a freeze did not occur, and I can tell you it's very interesting. So you know, people with tomatoes, they could a lot of places you could have kept the tomatoes growing in the ground all winter long and have them come back this spring.
Well, there was also a basil that I put into the same styrofoam cooler thing. Mm-hmm. Now, it's still about an inch and a half tall, but it's alive.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing. It is amazing. There are gauges all through my yard of temperature, and when coleus doesn't freeze, you know it's warm.
I love coleus.
when the nasturtiums, when I've got nasturtiums planted out in the yard just to see what happens, and they don't freeze, wow.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal. We've had very warm conditions. And I will say last week I went to bed and I heard that old familiar buzzing in my ear. They're yeah. already here. The mosquitoes are already back. Dadgummit.
Oh.
That's terrible.
I have not had any. I've been checking my rain barrels and, in fact, collecting water for the spring planting. Not spring planting. We're getting in early summer, let's face it. You know, it's like, it looks like, let's hope that there's not going to be another blizzard, you know, or too many more. We are so lucky to have just two or three days in a row so that it doesn't freeze all the way down. But on the other hand, we do have to deal with the insects, right?
Right. And you know, it will mean some things that one of the things that happens when you don't get much cold is that things like apples and peaches and maybe even pears this year and certainly plums and a lot of other things that people normally would grow are not going to get enough winter chilling to produce. Even some blueberries may struggle this year because of lack of winter chilling.
Am I correct in understanding that winter chilling is somewhere between freezing at 32 Fahrenheit and 45. It's not actually below 32.
That's right. So it's the conditions. It's the number of hours below 45 degrees is how they measure it. The most important ones temperatures though are those between 32 and 45 degrees.
And then of course the winds. You know, Yeah.
Got to take a break.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Tara. Good to hear from you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Listen, how do you know it's spring? This is an important question because some of the cues we've been using in the past, and if you think spring starts in April, we got to school you here. It doesn't start in April here. It ends in April on the Gulf Coast, and it's been that way for a long time. I don't know how we learn to ignore it. We listen to the TV too much is how we know more about our place from the TV than we do from actually going outside and seeing where we are. So spring may start in April in New York, but of course we've been through this. It ends in April in Mobile, about April 15th. That's the end of spring. But it starts about February 15th, February 20th, somewhere right around in there. Traditionally. At least that's been the trend for the latter half of the 20th century and the first half of the 21st century. It's pretty good indicator of spring, and I think it's pretty much been that way for a long time. But now we're beginning to see spring move back even earlier in a lot of years. And so, how do we know that? Well, you tell me. You tell me what you're looking at. You tell me what you're seeing. If you see signs that spring are starting later, will you tell me? I'm curious. What do you see? And if you see it's signs that spring may be starting sooner, what do you see? what's been happening. One of the interesting things that we use as a marker of spring, and Charlie reminds me of it, are the mist, the fogs, but let's call them the mists of Mardi Gras. You remember the mists of Mardi Gras? It's when and John, I know this has been going on for a long time, because John Baumhauer, my old friend, my late old friend, I miss him. John Baumhauer used to talk to me, and he would talk to me about Mardi Gras, and he said, here's how Mardi Gras used to be. And it was we didn't have the street lights, we didn't have the Chevy trucks pulling the things down the street. We had mules drawing the wagons. We had people with flambeau torches moving down the street. And he said these would emerge from the mist. And John would call them the mists of Mardi Gras, because every year almost every year when Mardi Gras occurred, it overlapped with this coming of spring, and spring on the Gulf Coast. It was our great, you know, Mardi Gras is sort of our great spring festival. And it would overlap with these mists. Now, let's talk about mists, because these fogs, these dense mists that are typical of Mobile, have been coming in. We had a lot of them this fall, didn't we? We had a lot of them in December. We had a lot of them in January and February, much earlier than usual. The mist of Mardi Gras came early and very thick. What's causing that? Well, you know, I can't put it on precisely, but here's my explanation. There's a temperature difference between the air and the land and the water. And when all of those things sort of hit the right point, when that temperature's, you reach a dew point and you get fog. The air just turns into fog, because basically we've reached a dew point where, and that dew point only occurs at certain times of year. And usually it's when temperatures, I'm going to say between 65, oh, I would say between 60 and let's say maybe 70 degrees. That's sort of a great window for having those kinds of fogs and for conditions being just right. And the land can't have gotten too warm, and the water can't have gotten too warm at that point. But when all of those conditions converge, you get the fog. And usually that's a sign of our spring. But wow, did it ever occur really early this year? Now, that, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean that we're having these fogs earlier and earlier in the year, these really dense fogs? That's going to be an interesting question, because it's going to affect the way we do things. Charlie says it could affect shipping. I don't know much about shipping, but it could affect maybe if boats can't come in these dense fogs, it's going to affect shipping. Will we have more days with the dense fogs? I don't know. But it's something to think about. It's something to investigate, because it's actually going to cost us financially. If we're not prepared for that, something we got to think about. We might have to put out more lights because we have more days with fogs, and it may cause too many delays for ships. Just a thought. It may mean that it's harder to land airplanes, particularly at this new airport that everybody's excited about here in downtown Mobile, where the fogs are unusually dense. So we may have more days where we can't take off. We have to think about that. Just things to think about, things to be prepared for. Dan is asking me about black tomatoes, and they're very good. So there's a whole new trend towards really dark black tomatoes. The one of the tomatoes that started the trend, or at least propelled it forward, was a famous tomato called Cherokee Purple. We don't really know where Cherokee Purple came from. It has the name Cherokee, but you know, like everybody, no, never mind. We don't know where the name Cherokee, we don't know where Cherokee Purple came from. We don't know why it's called Cherokee Purple. But there were a lot of tomatoes that were black that were grown around Soviet Georgia. Not American Georgia, but Soviet Georgia, the country of Georgia, over on the what sea is that? Black or the Black Sea?
Black Sea, one of them.
Yep. Black or I think it's Black Sea. And from other parts of Russia and from Eastern Europe. These black tomatoes have been used more and more in breeding. Black Crim is one. And there's another one, this, what did they call it? Black Vernissage. I'm not sure what I think that's the name of it. That I'm actually going to try this year. But so do those black tomatoes do well in Mobile? Well, here's the key. When we're thinking about tomatoes, you can grow any tomato you want, but you've got to have it produce in a timely fashion. So here's the trick. We know that particularly big tomatoes, don't do well in July. And one of the reasons they don't do well in July, there are many reasons why they do poorly in July, but one of the biggest reasons, Dan and others, is that the night temperatures are so high in July. Forget the daytime temperatures. It's the nighttime temperatures that make a difference. Nighttime temperatures are so high that most tomatoes, and particularly big tomatoes, and particularly tomatoes from Russia, will not even set fruit. Because tomatoes only set fruit. Their peak of fruit production usually occurs between about 67, 68 degrees and 72 degrees. When you get above 72 degrees, each degree above 72 degrees, it becomes increasingly hard for that tomato to set fruit. If you had a few hours each night, several hours each night, where the temperature dropped below 72 degrees, and you have that in Birmingham, you have that in Huntsville, even during midsummer, then you're going to get some fruit set. On the Gulf Coast, we can go weeks with temperatures never dropping below 72 degrees. And when that happens, you're not going to get tomato production. So look at your days. Look at the dates on your tomato. If you have a 90-day tomato or a tomato that produces takes 80 to 90 days to produce, and you do the math and you count back from, say, let's count back from June 20th, that's May, April, March. That means that if you don't get that, those tomatoes aren't going to start producing. If you plant them in March, those tomatoes aren't going to start producing until the middle of June, in which case they're going to produce for 3 days. You see what I'm saying? Because the night temperatures are going to jump up late June. You're also going to have severe bug problems by then. You're going to have humidity problems, which cause rainfall. So the key is finding tomatoes. Is to find tomatoes that produce in 60 to 70 days. 75 days, maybe. But here on the Gulf Coast, we really want to find tomatoes that start producing rapidly. Some of the early tomatoes don't taste good. That just, let's be frank. And so it's not worth growing them. Some of them taste pretty good, actually, some of their early ones. So we look for tomatoes that produce early in less than 75 days. That way we can get those tomatoes going. And by the way, the dates you count from are the dates that they become well-established in the ground, not the dates you start them from seed, but the days they are well-established in the ground, in the garden. If you can get those started in early March, then you can start your picking in May. And if you start picking in May, plant it right, you can get 6 weeks, 7 weeks, maybe 8 weeks of tomatoes if you're lucky. And that's a good deal. That's about what people in New Jersey get, that kind of tomato picking.
People in Ohio, that's their tomato picking season. They don't pick it all summer. They get several weeks because it takes them a long time because their spring starts later. So this is a good thing to remember. The big thing about picking tomatoes, you can grow any tomato you want, but remember the number of days that it takes for that tomato to produce. Don't go for the super big ones that take a long time. The other thing I say about tomatoes is that insect and disease pressure is so big that you don't want a tomato that produces only 4 or 5 or 6 tomatoes per plant, because I guarantee that 5 out of 6 of those tomatoes is going to be hit by bugs. and so you're going to lose. What you want is a tomato that's prolific, that produces a lot. So sometimes the biggest tomatoes are not as good as the smaller tomatoes. I'm trying that black vernissage myself, and we're going to see how it does. We'll talk about some of the other tomatoes when we come back.
She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I want to be. Cause Guguza is so crazy over me. Guguza grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call my gal Guguza cause she's sweet as she can be. She loves to hear me say, Guguza, please, hibachi me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, so growing tomatoes, you know, it's one of those things like when you start talking about tomatoes, you got to learn to pronounce all these foreign words. So I don't know what to think about black vernissage, which I'm gonna sound like I know what I'm talking about when I say it, but that's simply because I know when it's kind of a French word, I use a lot of nose and the tip of my tongue to pronounce it, and otherwise I just make it up as I go along. So here it is, this black vernissage, which is what we're going to call it right now, is could be a good one for us, Dan. I don't know. It's an experiment. But, you know, life's about experimenting. It's a sensible experiment, Dan. It is a very sensible experiment. It's a 75-day tomato, 70, 75 days, somewhere in there, which is good. That's not the best, but it's good. That's kind of the outside window. I wouldn't go with anything that took more than 75 days. It's a 75-day tomato. It's prolific. It produces a lot of small tomatoes. It's actually a relatively new hybrid, if I remember correctly. I don't remember who produced it, but it was one of the new fancy hybrids. So who knows? Who knows? But I think it's worth trying. Black Vernissage. So you tell me your experience with it. I'll tell you my experience with it. You're right, Dan. We do talk about small tomatoes a lot, that they are useful. The smaller tomatoes can be useful because they're prolific. The other thing about smaller tomatoes, and not all small tomatoes, let me be clear, but a lot of small tomatoes actually have the genes of other tomatoes in them. So there's some wild tomatoes. They're closer in a way to the wild tomato. And these tomatoes, these smaller tomatoes, have a ton of flavor, but they also tend not to be so sensitive to night temperatures, perhaps because they have inbreeding from tomatoes that grow in places with high night temperatures in Central and South America. And so they're more used to it. So there's a great tomato that I have grown, we call Coyote. The coyote tomato, it's a great tomato. It's from Veracruz province. It's from Veracruz off the coast, on the coast of Mexico. It's not from Mexico City. It's from the Gulf Coast of Mexico, and the Gulf Coast of Mexico can be humid with high night temperatures, just like here on the Gulf Coast. And one of the interesting things about that tomato is it produces all summer. It produces more when it cools down, but the warm nights don't stop it.
So it's an interesting tomato and a good one for us to grow. There are a number of smaller tomatoes like that. They also beat the stink bugs. And we go through this every year. It's an important thing to remember is beating the stink bugs. So you're not going to – the stink bugs, we have now – it's not as if we didn't create conditions that were perfect for all of our native stink bugs. Then we had to start going and introducing stink bugs. So we've now introduced so many different kinds of stink bugs to the native populations, and they just tear up any soft fruit. A lot of people have been complaining about the stink bugs on their citrus as well. Dan, didn't we talk about that? I think we talked about that. So those stink bugs, we want to get them in as early as we can. We can do some things to control the stink bugs, and we can talk about that a little later on. But the important thing is get a tomato that's going to produce so many fruit that you can give Mr. Stinkbug 50% and you still won't notice. And that's one of the great things. That's one of the great things. That's one of the great things. Bugs, Polecat's testifying here Polecat loved Mexico midget, which is one that we brought through the botanical gardens, got people introduced to. It has turned out to be very good. Sun Golds are another great one. They tend to do very well. Dan, I think they're not quite as productive as the coyotes, but they're pretty productive. Coyote's gotten to be a pretty popular tomato because of its distinctive flavor. It has a really great flavor. Mexico midget has great flavor. Matt's wild cherry had a great flavor, and Polecat is saying this is I'm quoting Polecat here. Also, less problem with bugs and worms with a small tomato, seems like to me. There it is. You got it. Hey, Joe, I'm listening. What's up?
Yeah, we had a rep that came in our store, and he brought us some acorns from Bruton, Alabama.
Yep.
They come off a bur oak tree. They're very, very large.
Yep.
And they're like furry around the acorn.
Yep.
And I Googled it up, and it said that they would grow here, but I don't never see none around here.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. I that is Quercus macrocarpa. Excuse me for cussing. We can call it the bur oak. It has other names. It's a good one. Mossy cup oak is another name for it. You see why it's called mossy cup? Because that little cup is so fuzzy, hairy.
Right.
Mossy cup oak, bur oak. It's a prairie oak. It's an oak of the prairies. Now, this is you're going to regret you asked me about this oak. This is an oak I'm fascinated by. It is quite common in the Midwest. It's quite common in the Midwest. It's very rare in the Southeast, except in a very few places. The Black Belt of Alabama has the southernmost population of mossy cup oak that I know of. I would not think you would actually find a native mossy cup oak in around Bruton, but you might in Butler County, and you certainly do in Montgomery County. So it is an oak of good limestone soils, and it loves those limes, and it is a beautiful oak. There's no question. It's a white oak. It's a very nice thing. I am reluctant. When I did the tree list for Mobile, I thought about mossy cup oak. I also thought about the fact that you really can't practically get it. You can't get southern mossy cup oaks from any place. But I didn't put it on the list for two reasons as a tree recommended for Mobile. One, we have no record of how it will perform here in Mobile. We have no record of how it will do with wet acid soils. And it's worth trying, but we should try it. So I think that's an open question. I didn't think we could get southern genetics. I think the difference between a mossy cup oak that comes from upper Illinois and the prairie is going to be very different than a mossy cup oak that comes from the Black Belt of Alabama. So there was a lot to balance out and a lot to think about. It sounds as if there's a chance that mossy cup oak you were offered or those acorns, may have been from Alabama, and they may be from a native mossy cup in Alabama. in which case it's worth trialing them. I don't know that they're going to do well on our acid soils down here. They do very well in the prairie soils, on those limestone soils in the Black Belt, and they would do very well in Monroe County and in Choctaw County and in Conecuh County on some of the limier clays there in the Red Hills region. They should do very well. So did I go on too long? Joe, ooh, I got to take a break. We're going to be right back. Can you hold on?
Yes, sir.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruddin' that Tennessee stud.
Hey, Sean Sullivan for the folks at Harry's.com. Been shaving with Harry's for years. Of course, I love saving the money. I love the convenience of having the blades show up. And I also love the shave, right? That's the key to the whole thing. And right now, there's never been a better time to get on board with Harry's. I know you've heard that over the years. It sounds cliche. In this case, y'all, this is the time. Join myself and 10 million others who tried Harry's. Right now, you can get their 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for just $3, plus free shipping. Harry's.com, use code MOBILE to get this deal. Limited time only, Harry's has a special offer for y'all. New customers get $5 off a trial set from Harry's when you use code MOBILE at Harry's.com. That means you get the razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover all for just $3, plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at Harry's.com. So go to Harry's.com today, use code MOBILE, and check out to claim your offer. And let them know I sent you and help support us right here at FM Talk 106.5.